Very pleased to welcome back to the show Greg Weldon. And this is a guy, by the way, as well, I first became familiar with Greg's work. I mean, we're talking years ago. And then because of recommendations of other analysts, because he was taking this global view, I mean, talking about stocks, of course, but fixed incomes, it could be bonds or precious metals. He had such a track record on precious metals, et cetera, et cetera. And what I do on this show is I find people who know what they're talking about, people with track records, and then I beg them to come on. Well, luckily, Greg has been a great friend of this show and has given us his time for years. Greg, so let me just start by saying I do appreciate it. I know this is a busy weekend for you, by the way. I think you're moving, aren't you? Well, that's right. Well, great stuff. I appreciate you taking the time. Let me just start with, you know, one of the questions that's floating around everywhere is you've got a U.S. election, of course. We had the last presidential debate this week. What impact, when you look at that, do you start assessing some sort of major impact on the investment markets when you look at whatever potential outcome there is?
Well, yeah. I mean, there is. We could talk about the bigger picture stuff for a while, politically speaking, but we won't get into that. I think that, you know, you have to kind of start to wonder what happens if a Biden victory is the end result, because I think a Trump win, to me, is still kind of discounted. I don't know that the market is, you know, people say, well, they're kind of pricing in a Biden victory, and I don't think that's necessarily true. I think the market is looking at this as the silent majority will kind of rise up and knock down socialism. If that doesn't happen, then, you know, that's kind of what you got to think about. So, you know, that's where my mindset is to try and figure out, well, what happens if Biden wins? And I think the kind of the one of the scenarios that to me makes the most sense, and of course there's so many different scenarios, that's what we do. We theorize 9 different ways from Sunday. So this way, when something starts to play out, we kind of have already thought it through and we kind of know what we want to do. So we're usually not caught off guard. Sometimes we are, but not usually. And in this case, I think the first thing the market would do would be look at infrastructure spending and a big spending package from the Democrats. And, you know, that of course, a lot of it depends too on what happens with the Senate, frankly, because the best, you know, if Biden's going to win, then the second best case scenario to a Trump victory would be a Biden win with the Republicans maintaining control of the Senate. So, you know, if that doesn't happen, then you have the bigger issue. And I think first, the market might like the idea of infrastructure spending. The commodities markets are kind of acting like that. Look at copper, for example. We know the home sector, you know, home building has been very hot. That's been one of our top picks this year, and it's been stellar performance. So you see kind of maybe the rumblings of that. But I think then you come to realities of it's tax and spend. It's not just spend. It's tax and spend. And I think when you look at the you know, when you try and go into a redistribution of wealth, that's not a good thing for the creation of wealth. It never is. So from that perspective, I think that would be a huge risk longer term, medium to longer term in the stock market. So you could see a lot of volatility. I mean, if Biden wins, Democratic, you know, takes control, Democrats take control of the Congress, then you're going to see probably a big rally and then potentially a big decline and then sideways at lower levels for quite some time. And I think that would be kind of the worst case scenario.
Where does the sort of so-called stimulus package, Federal Reserve, step into that? Because I kind of look and say both parties at least want the stimulus package. Details can be worked out, but it's going to be a massive influx. So I'm kind of with you that the initial blush can be a very, you know, doesn't matter. It's positive for the markets, but it's because of the amount of money getting created and it's because of the stimulus.
Yeah, well, I think the other thing then is the longer term, not only from the perspective of, you know, you want to kind of redistribute wealth, and that's a negative for the stock market, but then let's talk about the elephant in the room, Mike. I mean, it's debt. It's all the debt. It's the balance sheet. It's the money printing. It's all the things that we talked about at the World Outlook Conference. It's Age of Aquarius. It's polarization. It's intensified, you know, movement on both ends of the spectrum. And everything that we have discussed, you know, that we did discuss in February, you see it more permeated, more tangible, you know, it's right in front of you. And I think that's more of that too. And when you throw the debt into the mix, just this week, Spain suspended their constitutional rules on debt and deficits. Just this week, Italy announced they're going to borrow another half a trillion euro, some of that in dollars, right? So they're going to be at $3 trillion. Spain is going to be at 120% of GDP. Italy's going to be lucky to keep it within 150, 160. The U.S. is already well above 100. You got another, you know, $2 trillion in kind of COVID stimulus, and then $3 trillion in infrastructure stimulus. That's five, another $5 trillion on top of what you've already done here. At some point, the bond market revolts and regurgitates, and you have a real problem. I've been doing some special pieces lately, and actually some speaking engagements, and the kind of the topic is, are bonds worthless here? I mean, are they worthless? Mm-hmm. It's fixed income, right? Do they give you income? No. Many places you have to pay the government to hold your money. That's about as ludicrous as it gets, and that's why Europe suffers, because they're sucking all that money out of the economy. But, you know, in the end game, does it protect your money? Well, you'll get your money back, but the dollars, the paper dollars you're going to get back, don't buy as much stuff. Bonds, to me, are worthless. And the price here, when you look at risk-reward dynamics relative to the fundamentals, bonds may be the biggest short of all time, and you may be looking at the potential pricking of the biggest bubble in the history of mankind. Seriously.
Talking to Greg Weldon. You can find him at Weldon Online, weldononline.com. I'm going to hold there because I know what I'm about to ask him, and it's going to be about gold and silver when we come back. So I want to stop right there, come back with Greg Weldon. Stay with us. And Greg, you just were talking about, you know, the massive creation of money, the destruction of the bond market, which to me is completely obliterated in Europe. With when people start talking about negative rates, that's just, for me, another way of saying, well, why don't we just permanently eliminate the bond market? But I want to talk about specifically gold and silver and get a quick take from you. At the World Outlook Conference, this is pre the big run-up, you were saying get into gold. You also had the most interesting idea I heard at the Outlook Conference when you said, why not buy some junior gold mining stocks? Because if gold moves, they'll move, and they're sort of permanent, like they're on the books forever, as opposed to buying, say, a 6 months or a 9 month option. I just thought that was a wonderful idea. Obviously worked out. Obviously your forecast about gold worked out with the big move starting about a month later. Tell me what you think now.
You know, Mike, they worked out real well in terms of, you know, trading some of the, you know, lower priced, higher risk stocks as call options, because there's, you know, there's no expiration date. There's no time decay. You're not paying premium away, and you can just put them in your back pocket and, you know, wait to ring the cash register, which we've done several times. So that's, you know, and that continues to be a viable strategy in all of the stocks that we have put out there in that vein. I think here you had a correction. You had an opportunity, you know, kind of a time and space dynamic where the pattern and the move from the highs in the dollar opened the door for some correction higher in the dollar. You had some wobble in some of the emerging market currencies, Turkey in particular, South African rand, Brazilian real were another two currencies. But that's stabilized now. Those currencies in particular, we're actually working on a piece for Monday that will be the emerging market currencies, which some of them are actually strengthening. Taiwan dollar's at a new move high here, and we've liked Taiwan this entire time. But in terms of gold, you didn't get the rally in the dollar you might have thought you would get. From a technical perspective, it should have been greater, and it wasn't. And that speaks volumes to how inherently weak the dollar really is here. And it looks like it's ready to crack again. And it looks like gold and silver are ready to break out again. You got clear-cut breakout levels, Mike, at 1940 in the December gold contract and at 2570 in the December silver. And you got really good risk-reward dynamics here because you have a triangle pattern. You got the moving averages are close. You have the Fibonacci's are close. The technicals fit. The fundamentals kind of fit. The backdrop, you know, kind of macroeconomically fits. So I think it's time for the next run. Now, I would add that we also like Bitcoin and Ethereum as well. So we like, I don't like to call them cyber currencies or cryptocurrencies because they're not currencies. All right, let's get real. I mean, they're not legal tender. They're a commodity. They're mined like gold. I mean, you know, I'd rather own gold. It's rare in the universe, created by the universe, as opposed to something created by man that's a little nefarious. And especially in an electrical grid failure, you know, you're going to want to own silver and gold instead of, you know, cryptocurrencies, quote unquote. But they're commodities. They provide a value, and it is a store of value, like many commodities are. Oil would be another one too, where you are, you know, kind of holding your wealth in something besides paper currency. And in this case, people have access to this. It's online. It's easy to do. You know, the younger generations absolutely love it, and they, you know, they think it's going to replace gold and the dollar. And, you know, so great, man. Let's run it up. And I think it provides that safety now, where, man, what we just talked about in the last little segment is really the key point here. What they're doing, what they always do, Michael, and they are more desperate than ever, because you can't just keep cutting rates. This is why the Fed has said, look, we want inflation, and we're going to now their policy is communication. This is their policy tool. That's mm-hmm. a sign of desperation, if ever I've seen one. And that should send people running for gold, for silver, and for these crypto commodities, I want to call them. But, you know, kind of the point, you know, in that sense is, I mean, again, they debase the purchasing power of paper money. And they're doing it again. And this is the time, like right now, to be getting back involved if you, you know, took profits like we did at one point.
And just to remind people, I mean, at any given time, we're deciding whether to exchange that paper called a currency for something else, because we feel that is the safer or the better place to be. And that's what Greg's describing here. Massive creation doesn't help it. It hurts it. I mean, the value of anything when you break, you know, tons of it. Well, that's what we've done. So people are saying, hey, you know what? I think I'd rather to hold gold than that paper you've got over there. I'd rather hold silver. I'd rather hold Bitcoin. And I think that's a very important theme that Greg's outlining here. Greg, let me just sort of get toward the finish that gives you a chance to wrap it up a little bit here. But seriously, what keeps Greg Weldon up at night?
You know, what keeps me up at night, Mike, is that I think the opportunities in front of us and, you know, the opportunities we've just had, frankly, over the last, you know, since August of 2018, when this phase for us kicked in, is, you know, not missing the opportunities. It's like, I want to get to my desk and see what's going mm-hmm. on in Europe and where is Asia? And oh my gosh, you know, it's almost like kind of a rebirth in the sense that you remember how we were in our 30s and used to have the little Quotrek machine and the little beeper and everything. And mm-hmm. you just never didn't have that beeper with you to see if right. there was any price change at any given time. And it's kind of like that again, because I think the opportunities, Michael, coming are tremendous, especially in the commodities. A couple quick ones for your listeners. Nickel is big. You know, the connection to EV batteries, supposedly by 2025, you know, you're looking at a nickel in a deficit situation. It just moved into backwardation on the LME. Copper is in the same vein from the home building sector. So the base metals are hot. Tin also looks good. The DBB, the Dutch boy is the ETF of that. The ags as well. Crop report here, you know, they cut the soybean crop dramatically, and more importantly, they cut ending stocks. So this is 2 years in a row after you had a huge surplus bumper crop. All these soybeans are gone in 2 years because you had the drought, you had the flood last year. This year, you didn't meet up to the USDA's expectations. You have a couple situations like that: cotton, wheat, sugar. So there's the DBA, that's, you know, Dutch Baker Alpha for the agricultural commodity ETF. So I think those are some of the great opportunities out there. So what keeps me awake at night is, well, I need to get to my desk to see what's happening, because the opportunities are just tremendous right now.
Well, and also I'm sitting here patting myself in the back, because for last year's World Outlook Conference, of course, we sort of started thinking about it earlier than that. And we said, you know, I think commodities are going to be the next hot thing. And I'm glad you mentioned agriculturals, because I kind of thought they would lead the way maybe, and was so pleased to hear, you know, us pushing, you know, talking about the opportunities in gold and silver. Copper's done better than I thought. I thought it would do fine, but given the pandemic, I didn't see this kind of a move coming, but it was consistent with that broader theme of look to the commodities. So I'm just so thrilled that you're talking about it, and you do it on WeldonOnline.com, you know, and you're on your, you know, on a weekly basis, a daily basis there, you're following it. So I just think that's a very important theme that you're emphasizing, that people, you know, become extremely aware of, because, you know, I think that's, as I say, a next major field of opportunity over the next couple of years. Let me just finish with this. And again, just some, I know it's broad-based advice. It's sort of, you know, everybody's got to talk with their own financial advisor and figure out what their circumstances are. But broadly speaking, then, as we come in the next while, you're still comfortable in the stock market, as you said, comfortable getting in with gold and silver, that opportunity coming, you know, and I'm talking about not necessarily instant trading, but, you know, sort of the major moves coming up, and no bonds. Thanks very much. No bonds.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, I'm not against stock markets, and I think there's risk to stock markets, you know, in a bigger way when you look at, you know, where all the money is and stuff like that, and all the ownership and all the passive investment. And, oh, my God, you know, when you look at the consumer, I think the consumer is going to cocoon to some degree. I mean, you know, you still have a huge unemployment hole, man, not just here, but, you know, everywhere in the world. I mean, this is the thing. People think, hey, this is America. We'll come out of this quickly and, you know, we'll push on and America drives the world. Everywhere in the world this has happened, you have high unemployment and holes blown open in labor markets. So to me, that's a bigger concern, but there's always opportunities. Another one I'll throw for your viewers has been, and this was such an easy call. When you see students on, you know, Ivy League campuses protesting at halftime of football games last year about, you know, we want our endowment funds to liquidate their petroleum stocks, and the endowment funds say, okay, we'll do that. Well, hello, light bulb doesn't take much electricity to get this light bulb going. We bought solar, we bought wind. The disinvestment in petroleum has been interesting, but I also think that creates opportunity. Because to think that you're going to get the electronic vehicles on the road to the degree that's forecast, I think is really overly optimistic. And when you know refineries, Mike, I mean, they're tough to maintain. It costs a lot of money. These companies have no cash. They're debt ridden. You know, maintaining the refineries, you don't build new refineries for gasoline. I could see longer term here a big opportunity in gasoline going forward. But in the meantime, we've really benefited from solar has been huge this year. We've been all over it. Same with wind now is kind of starting to pick up the pace. And I guess wind was actually mentioned at the debate the other night. I absolutely do not watch those things. I can't believe how horrible the U.S. political scene has become.
Yeah. Oh, I can't believe it. We'll leave it at that because now I've got a headache. But what is it? 340 million people in the States, 350, something like that.
Yeah.
And that's our choice.
I know where you go with this.
And that's our choice.
I'm not even going to say it.
It's absolute, like in Canada, by the way, you know, we get tons of coverage of course, the U.S. election, and that I would say the majority would.
You know, Mike, the problem is that it's attack, attack, attack. Look what he said, what she said. I mean, where is the unity? Where is some leader? We need a leader. These guys are not leaders, you know, in terms of bringing this country together here. This is the United States of America. And right now we are the divided states of America. And I'm just sick of all the rhetoric and politics as usual and backstabbing and negativity. And I can't take it. We need more love, man. And it's the age of Aquarius. So thankfully, there's a lot more love around, too. You just got to look for it.
I got to leave it at that, Greg. Fabulous stuff. WeldonOnline.com.